Hi everyone, this is Tisha and welcome to 99% Effective, along with my co-host George.
Good morning, everyone.
Today we are going to be talking about the legislative session and family involvement and how important that is.
Awesome. All right. So good morning, everyone. As Tisha mentioned, we are going to be talking about kind of the legislative process here in Connecticut. And we are happy to introduce our guest, Quentin Q. Pipps. Quentin represents Middletown's 100th district, which includes downtown, North End, South Fire District, Wesleyan Hills, and Wesleyan University areas. Outside of his time at the Capitol, he also serves as Director of Advocacy and Policy at Excellence Community Schools. In this role, he builds capacity and supports excellence community families through advocacy, community organizing, and strategic partnering. Q is also the co-founder and co-director of Equity CT, which is a nonprofit dedicated to creating learning opportunities, building actionable understanding of equity, and consciously dismantling systemic inequality through action and civic engagement. So welcome, Q.
No, thank
welcome.
You for having me. No, really, really glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in. So, Hugh, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to become a legislator?
So, what's good? Just really glad to be here with you all, and so I really appreciate your work. So, Representative Q. Pipps, from born and raised here in Middletown. I've lived here my entire life, born here. So this is really not just the district that I represent, but it's really what I call home. It's where my church is. It's where I went to high school. It's where my favorite pizza places are. It truly is home. I always envisioned myself as serving in some sort of legislative capacity or some sort of elected capacity. I've been in student government since sixth grade. So sixth grade, middle school, first, I was a class president in eighth grade, class officer in high school, went off to Bryan University, the first Black student senate president at Bryan University, and immediately got back into legislative work to elected politics as soon as I graduated from college. It's always in my heart. And the reason that it was in my heart is that my family are a family of servants to our community. So my grandparents were deacon and deaconesses. They were very involved in the church, which was all about healing of their community, serving their community, make sure that folks were fed. My mom worked for the state of Connecticut. She worked for both CBH and River Valley Services for 30 plus years, helping those with mental health issues, whether depression and schizophrenia, really helping our most vulnerable community, getting the resources that they need and seeing their service to their community. I oftentimes thought I was going to follow their steps and do it in the church too, but I really felt that secular work and being able to do that in the community with everyone was really what my calling was. And there is so much need out there. And I think the final impetus was when I was a mentor at McDonough Elementary School, where I was a mentor. And my mentee was working through and having conflicts and obstacles with a lot of the same challenges that I had as a student, needing additional help and support with special education needs, but not really having them for multiple reasons. One, because the resources weren't there. And also there was a lack of capacity for those that really wanted to help and wanted to care, but didn't quite understand the systemic issues that were going on in my mentee's life. And knowing that I had those same challenges and that this was repeating over and over and over again, it was time to change and do something fundamentally different.
That's great. And, you know, it really sounds like, you know, your background is really kind of rich with that feeling of service and being able to give back to your community. So, you know, I'm very curious how your role in the two organizations that we mentioned earlier kind of shaped some of your views on bills that are introduced or kind of your view on things that happen at the Capitol.
No, that's a great question. What I like to say is that the work that I do is all related and they have all led to one another. In many ways. So in my professional career, I was a community banker for close to 10 years. Then I ran a small nonprofit for 2 years, Middletown Downtown Business District. And that was during that time when I was a mentor at McDonough Elementary. And then I switched to my new job, education, which is really one of my strong passions and callings as a director of advocacy and policy for Excellence Community Schools or Stanford Excellence. As a director in advocacy policy, it's kind of esoteric. Like what does that really mean? And at the end of the day, it means that like our students and our families have needs and are entitled to have those needs met. So we have to do whatever it takes to be able to get that. So sometimes it's social work, sometimes it's organizing, sometimes it's administrative and like public administration. Sometimes it's advocacy or teaching people how to navigate political systems, and whether it's internal like school political systems or external with the legislature or with their mayor or the board of ed and so on and so forth. So it's really about capacity building. And what I realized really early on is that folks did not need to like have a better understanding of their situation or environment. They knew the struggles that they're going on. They could tell you that it was hard to put food on the table. They could tell you that they couldn't put money in their savings account because the money wasn't there because they weren't getting paid enough. They could tell you that the reason that their child was struggling with reading was because they have the same exact teacher that didn't teach them how to read. We knew what the problems were, but what we did not have as a community and as a collective was the capacity to make those things change. So moving from the idea of recognizing the problem and identifying it, being able to be heard and seen and visible and having that recognition that the problem exists, and then being able to offer solutions and then being part of the process to actually implement the solutions. And I think having all the different avenues, whether as an educator at University of Hartford, as an adjunct professor, most can be able to teach people about these systemic issues from the very beginning, and like in their college age, before they go into the workforce, or as a parent advocate and being able to help parents understand their own empowerment or the education side, and with Equity CT, and having once again being able to organize multiple groups of people to say, hey, this is wrong. What's going on? How do we change this? And then on the legislative side, making sure that all voices are heard. It shouldn't just be the most powerful, but shouldn't be the ones that have the most access. It shouldn't be about those that just have the money. It should be really about listening to our community, listening to our constituents, and providing the best resources and best solutions so that all of us can do well. There's no benefit where we have like the haves and the have-nots, and there will be more for all if we can truly, truly, truly believe that all people can do well and all people should do well.
That's just so well said, and just your energy and your passion are just amazing. You know, thank you again for the work that you're doing. What committees are you currently on, and how do they play a role in the state?
So I am the chair of the Aging Committee. I am the youngest chair in the history of the committee at the very young age of 37. Apparently that's young. I mean, I guess that is young in the legislature in many ways. But I'm also on the Finance Committee, which is all about essentially the revenue side. So it's not about where the money goes, but it's all about how much money comes in. So essentially taxes. Mm-hmm. The Finance Committee's taxes. And then I'm also on Commerce, which is all about how to empower your, typically your small businesses, your independent business owners. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's some of the major and larger corporation support too, but it's really about how do we support our local independent business owners, like the traditional downtown and Main Street that we have here in Middletown, mm-hmm. and also up on the education side, right? So how do we prepare a dynamic workforce for the new economy that we have, whether it's biotech, whether it's the service industry, whether it's hospitality and tourism, whether it's engineering, all the many new fields that we have, that Connecticut is in a like perfect place to be a major player in, because of our unique assets that we have with Wesleyan University, our community colleges, Yale, mm-hmm. UHeart, Sacred Heart, UConn, our signature public institution. And I have to give a lot of credit to our Connecticut State Universities also, so Central and Eastern, that have done very well with empowering our next generation of leaders.
Yeah, I agree with you on that very, very much.
And I should also say that I'm also co-chair of two different caucuses. I'm the co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. So those of us, once again, that are deeply concerned about the inequities in our systems, and also the co-chair and founder of the Downtown and Main Street Caucus with Representative Garaby of Windsor and Representative Jen Leeper in Fairfield. And it's for those of us in large towns, small cities that can have traditional main streets or traditional downtowns, and how we can add additional support to our independent business owners, which are really going to be the key to getting our economy back up and going as we get past COVID.
So you sound like you're extremely busy. Just doing great work.
My mom would say that if you want to get something done, you give it to a busy person. She usually adds that if you want to get it done right, then you give it to a busy woman. So I got half of it.
Oh, love her.
We can't be perfect.
There are many ways people try to reach out to you, I'm sure. Is there a method that works best for the majority of legislators?
Yes, and. So the big key piece that I would say is don't stop trying. Mm-hmm. If that first email doesn't work, send a second one. Second one doesn't work, make a third one. I would generally sway away from the form letters and form emails. I think they can kind of help, but those typically aren't the most effective. I would also recommend always pick up the phone. Call their offices, I think, is one of the best ways to get a hold of your legislator and ask for a call back. I would also recommend if they do give their cell phone number out, either on their mailers. Also, there's oftentimes there's mailers. Send the mailers in. Like when we ask for feedback, we are really looking for that feedback, because that's one of the ways that we drive policy and help share with our leadership about our priorities and say, it's not me saying, this isn't my concern. Mm-hmm. This is the 500 people that wrote me saying that this is their concern, whether it's healthcare, whether it's raising wages, whether it's education. If we have that evidence and the data, it makes it a lot easier for us to do our jobs. The other thing I would recommend is participating in two public sessions, right? So you have your public hearings, which is the official way to give your feedback. So you can write information in and send letters or send emails to testify. And then you can also share your story. Never read your testimony. Always add additional information that is not written. What's getting that personal connection, that personal story, makes it a lot easier. You can always argue with someone's data, right? And how you interpret the data. You can't argue with your story. You can't argue with mm-hmm. how you feel. So definitely share that personal connection with the issue. And a lot of times we legislators will have things like town halls or coffee hours. Please show up. Even whether if you agree, please show up. That makes it a heck of a lot easier. It makes it a little bit less painful sometimes. But if you don't disagree, come and talk about it. Let's have a discussion. One of the communities that I really appreciate sometimes, even though I'll disagree to put it simply, is a lot of the folks that have concerns around vaccines. Like now I think the data and the science is pretty clear, but I also appreciate those that are advocating with, said if they had a child that got injured the first time and having that real concern about putting their second child in danger. I mm-hmm. fundamentally understand, which is why I said I want to have that dialogue. Like, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let's talk through these issues and obstacles. And let's figure out how we can empower everyone to make the best decision for themselves, for their children, and for the entire community. And I said, I really appreciate a lot of those conversations, especially because it's an argument around supposedly a religious exemption. Mm-hmm. And I'm an usher myself and the son of a missionary and the grandson of a deacon and deaconess. This is one of the few times we can talk about like the interaction between religion and state. And I think it's a fun conversation. Now, if you don't like good debate, I don't think it's going to be as fun for you, but right. I appreciate the witty back and forth. And let's talk. Like, as you can see, I love talking, right? But I think more importantly, I think what makes me a better leader is the ability to listen. So I really mm-hmm. want to hear where you're coming from so we can make better solutions together.
I want to circle back to the mailers that you mentioned, which I never knew about. So I'm grateful for that. When is there a specific time that the mailers go out, or could it be any time? Like, when should people keep an eye out for those and not just think it's junk mail?
So there's two things. So one, you can always sign up for your legislators' emails. So you can mm-hmm. get on their e-list. I mm-hmm. heavily encourage you to do that. I would also encourage you to follow any of the other legislators who are chairs of committees that you care about. So if you care about environment, make sure you follow Representative Dorinda. If you care about finance, make sure you follow Representative Scanlon. Really, really important to do that. So but 100%, make sure you follow your own state rep and state senator's email list. Mm-hmm. That's the best mm-hmm. way to stay informed about what's going on in your own community. Two, the mailers come out regularly. Regularly is, I can't say it's like every 3 months or 6 months, because it's regular. It's hard to explain, but you can expect anywhere from 2 to 4 every 2 years. It's essentially twice a year, mm-hmm. sometimes 3 times a year, depending on certain mm-hmm. situations.
Okay, great. Awesome.
But during COVID, that was like literally one of the best ways to get information out, other than the e-blast. But like when it mm-hmm. first came out, almost every single legislator's mailers were going to be about COVID relief, what to mm-hmm. do, how to stay safe. If you're in trouble with money, here's resources to go. Probably the most informative piece of paper you could have during this last crisis, or in the crisis that we are currently still in.
That's very helpful.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, kind of leads into one of the questions that a lot of people have of, you know, we talked about what's the best way to contact a particular legislator? You know, how do you make sure that the things that you feel are important are heard? And, you know, you gave some really good ways of how to help empower your particular constituents. You know, so I think a lot of people are thinking now we're about a year into the whole COVID process, you know, and that's certainly shaping this upcoming session that we're currently in. What do you see kind of being the priorities for the state and the impact that's going to have on people attempting to have that reach out, you know, whether it be written testimony or attending public hearings via Zoom?
I have to give a lot of credit to the former Commissioner of Education, Cardona, or technically still, but he's going to be the new Secretary of Education. And he was very vocal during early parts of COVID and said, if we don't change anything during COVID, or we'll never change anything after. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us, especially in the nonprofit community, in the racial justice community, in the education community, have been saying for years that the system is broken, right? That the inequities that we have are sometimes by design, and oftentimes still like what's getting hurting vast numbers of people that need the help the most. If that wasn't apparent during COVID, you are being either like willfully blind or you have some vested interest in keeping the system the way that it was. But there is no way that we can say that things cannot change where we had, once again, some of our community members, and once again, I'm not critiquing success, but we had some folks that were able to see like their wealth go up 20-30% in their savings. And we had other folks that literally were calling over and over again, like to my office saying, I can't get a hold of Department of Labor in order to get my unemployment so I can just feed my family or I can go and pay my rent. And we're gonna have a major crisis on our hand in terms of foreclosures. We're gonna have a major employment crisis. That is going on. We 100% have a major education crisis going on in the state of Connecticut. I'm not sure if you all just saw the article in the Hartford Current, but the data shows in Hartford that there is 60% of the students are chronically absent in the Greater Hartford District. And I think it was 30% in the magnet school system in Greater Hartford are chronically absent. That is a crisis. We need to be waving the flags. We need to be changing how we invest our resources to getting help for those that need the help the most right now, period. So I share all that to say that where do we go after we've gone through this, after we and kids are continuing to go on through this major crisis? We have to take an equity lens. We have to give folks that need the help the most amount of resources so that we can all get into a more even playing field. That doesn't mean that we all are going to have the same, right? And in the end, but we at least need to invest in folks so they have some of the basics. The right to healthcare so they can stay healthy, a home over their head so that they can be safe, the right to food so they can be full and be able to be productive in our society, the ability to have a good education so you have the opportunity for the American dream. These are the things that we all are supposed to have and need to have. And I think we are in many ways guaranteed in our U.S. Constitution and our state constitution. So the things that I think we need to look at tax relief. And tax relief is going to look by restructuring how we bring in money for our entire state. We need to go back and reprioritize, especially to institutions like our educational system, to our nonprofit community, and directly into the hands of folks that are going to spend it right back in our economy to re-stimulate our economy. These are the sort of solutions that I think will help bring our state back to where we can get it to go to.
That's great information. Again, I keep saying, I just applaud the work that you're doing. So we talked about some of the best ways for individuals just to get in touch with their legislators, you know, emails, phone calls, the mailers, following them, you know, getting on the email distribution list. Now, this is where I think there's a lot of confusion, and we see this in the news, of how does someone go about trying to testify at the Capitol for something that they want their voice heard?
Perfect. So this is where I would say, as a parent advocate and former lobbyist, I use lobbyists in the loosest sense of the word. I mean, they gave me one of the fancy badges, and I said my mama was really proud that her son was a lobbyist because she's the only one of her friends that had a son that was a lobbyist. Now, if you ask her what a lobbyist is, I don't think she can tell you. But it was really cool to be able to say that her son was a lobbyist. So, but I don't think I was one. But beyond that, the power dynamic is very difficult, right? Because it's especially in the middle of a crisis. If you're trying to figure out how to get food on the table, you're trying to figure out online learning with your child, how do you go about learning, like, when there's a public hearing for the particular bill that you want? That's a very, very difficult process, right? Which is why I say the more people that we have doing this work together, the better that we are. So follow organizations like, now, Equity CT doesn't do direct advocacy, but they can help train you about the process for how to go about getting information. Follow them or go to their website and get on their mailing list. CT Voices is another great organization that gives you a lot of information about upcoming policies that are going on. The Middlesex Children's Foundation with Izzy Greenberg, another great organization to find out what policies are coming down the table that probably would directly affect you. I'm trying to think of some other ones.
The ARC Connecticut.
ARC, yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. CT Nonprofit Association. Once again, there are a lot of organizations that are going to be able to keep their eye out for all of us about important legislation to follow so that we can always can just be aware of it. Because, I mean, it literally is a full-time job. That's what a lobbyist is, right? It's their job to see what policies are coming down the pike, what language is there, what works, what doesn't work, to give feedback to the legislators, to help organize communities around how to change these sort of things. There is a lot of information out there, but once again, the information is vast. It's huge. Mm-hmm. I think I told this story about a good friend that's a really good lobbyist in that building. It was my third year, and maybe it was my second year. And he asked about, did you see the goal list yet? And I was like, oh yeah, I saw the goal list. And he could tell by my face, because he knew me for so long. He's like, you have no clue what the goal list is. And it was like, and I had, at that point, I've been paying lobbyists for 2 years. Yeah. And had zero clue what a goal list was. Because the process, once again, is by design complicated in order for some folks to be able to have more power than others, mm-hmm. right? And you can't learn all those sort of things without help and support, which is why you have to lean on the organizations that will help care about the other issues that you care about, and you can follow their lead as you learn the process, so then you could then be your own central engine of power information, and then disseminate that information out to everyone else, and then now we can all do this together. But you got to start with friends, you got to start with like-minded people. You can't do it on your own. This politics in general, what's gonna have that first work in politics, the POLI, Latin, what's going for people or group or more than mm-hmm. one. I think that's the key word, is that this work is not an individual work. This work is by definition group work or community work or teamwork. Or as Representative Porter always says, teamwork makes a dream work. So yeah. If you have a dream, you got to do it with the team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and talking about testifying, you know, I want going back probably, my son is now 22, so probably 20 years. And I testified on something that was being brought up, and it is scary to think about it, but mm-hmm. somebody walked me through the process. I wrote down my testimony. I made sure it was that 3 minutes, and I practiced, and wow, did I feel powerful after I read that. And I went in, it was organized, and I think I made a difference. You know, I know I made a difference.
You 100% did. So yeah. Here's the feedback I would give still a parent advocate, was that teaches people how to testify, right? Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, I came up today because my wife is testifying later about telehealth and expanding to make sure that in the middle of a crisis where we're all isolated and alienated, having the ability to go and have therapy and counseling over mm-hmm. the phone or online is going to be integral for people's health. I know that personally. As shout out to my therapist, because she's awesome. And what's going to help me get through this really challenging time. So there's two pieces of feedback I would give, or several pieces of feedback. One, make sure that you submit the written testimony and mm-hmm. share that, give that in. I will also say that is by nature, when you are testifying, it is a scary process. Every time I hit my button, so I've been an elected official since 2007, 4 years on PNC, 8 years as city treasurer, and now I'm on my third year as a legislator. Every time I hit the button to talk, I get butterflies in my stomach. I get nervous. My mouth gets dry. To this day, I've been doing it since 2000, so for 14 years, and I still get nervous. And that doesn't even count the times where I was in some sort of elected capacity in student government. I have been doing this for literally I've been elected to something longer than I have not been elected to, and still mm-hmm. get scared every single time. So being scared or being terrified even or fearful is part of the process, and that is a good thing. You're going to use that to drive you to be able to share your story. The other thing that I have learned, and I have to give a shout out to one of our parents, Melissa, who is one of our best advocates for the school that I work for. She started to read her testimony. You could see her shaking, and you could see the stumbling and stuttering in her voice. Mm-hmm. And she literally just crumpled up the paper, threw it, and it just started talking about her daughter and sharing her daughter's story and how well her daughter was doing in school and how great of a reader she became. And just talk from her heart. So I tell everybody, submit your written testimony. Let us read your testimony. We'll read that later. I don't need you to read it to me. I can read it, right? But you will never have that 3 minutes again to be able to say, like, really what made you wait for hours, sign up, write this, mm-hmm. this testimony. I need to hear from you. I need to hear your story. That's what's going to change my opinion. I want to read your work too. But if you can add that additional layer where you can look me in my eyes, you can look the crowd in your eyes, and either the tears come down or the laughter comes out, that's what's going to really drive change. That's the part that no matter the best paid lobbyists will never be able to give the sort of impassioned story that you can about your own life or your child's life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah.
So I tell them, crumble it up. Just crumble it up, throw it, like literally throw it, it'll make you laugh, and you're gonna be ready to go.
Yeah, and I think these are really helpful things for, you know, individuals in the community to hear of. You know, it's not just about knowing what bill that you want to support. It's how does that impact you? What does that do to, you know, you as an individual, to your family? What is it that you want the legislators to hear so that they can then take that information and say, this is why this is important? You know, I think I heard that there's well over, you know, 1,000 bills that were proposed during the session, and there's just no way that all of those, well, 5,000. So, I mean, there's really just no way that realistically all of those are, number one, going to be heard, or they're going to make it through the process. So if you really are passionate about something, you need to be able to have that personal connection. And I think that, you know, the information you shared today really helps us provide that information to people, say, this is how you become an empowered constituent. This is how you get that group of people who support what you support behind you. Let's all submit the written testimony. So if we can't commit to the public hearing, which can drag on for long periods of time throughout the night, as some mm-hmm. of them do, this is really how we get ourselves heard. So Hugh, I just want to thank you for everything today and providing, you know, our listeners that opportunity to hear from someone who's doing this day in and day out, but also has that deep commitment to their community and wants to be involved and push the state forward in the directions that are really going to help us get out of this particularly tough time, but then also thinking broader from this.
Thank you. I guess the last part I would say was this work is driven by people and by the people, right? You are the boss. You are the leaders. We as a community are the leaders. I get that there is 150 plus of us legislators and 36 senators, but we are only as strong as you all are, right? So if you are saying what the concerns are, if you are driving the conversation on what the issues that we should be working on, that is the real way that legislation gets passed. And I think a good example was this summer, where we were able to pass a pretty comprehensive, dare I say progressive, police accountability bill. Now, mm-hmm. people have been talking about the disparate impact between how policing looks like in different communities and a greater need for police accountability and police and community policing throughout the entire state. We've been talking about that for decades, to be frank, hundreds of years, from the very beginning of our country, about like what does policing look like for communities. But the reason that we were able to get that passed this last year is because we had throughout the state, and not just in Middletown, not just in Hartford, not just in the big cities, but in Deep River, in Chester, in Ellington, in Harlington, in all even the little towns, there was protests and marches and walks everywhere. The people demanding that we have change here in the state of Connecticut. The people talk and share and yell and call and email. Legislators will listen. I promise mm-hmm. you. I promise you that. We're going to be compelled to action because of your action. And that's really how this work is done.
Yeah. And I think that's such a valid point that, you know, it really is about the group and what change do we want to see within Connecticut and how people are going to pull themselves together to do that.
My favorite thing to say to leadership is like, I'm not going to go back and tell those 25,000 people that I'm not listening. So if you, like here's why I'm going to vote for this, right? Or here's why I can't vote for this. Because once again, my constituents or the entire state is saying that we need to make these changes. So you can go and tell them that we're not listening, but I'm not going to be the one because I am listening. So how are we going to fix this? How are we going to make this a little bit better? That is the most powerful argument you can make each and every time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank
again.
Thank
you again.
So much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Please reach out. I'm supposed to get my cell phone number, 860-830-5407. I appreciate the calls and texts. I like having these sort of dynamic conversations. And let's do the work together. I would also encourage everyone to look at Equity CT, a nonprofit was getting around community empowerment and community voice. And let's just keep working. There's a lot of need out there. I know how hard it is. I know how resilient our communities are. And we're going to keep doing it. We're going to keep doing it with a smile on our face, even when it is tough.
Thank you so much for taking the time and, you know, and just everything you do is just so appreciative, and just thank you.
Well, thank you.
Just amazing information. So it was just great to have him. George, thanks for organizing. George was the one who asked him to join us. So, you know, George, thanks for doing that. But what great information. And, you know, everything that we talked about, you know, his phone number and different articles and organizations, we're going to have all that information in the show notes. And George can go over all the places where you could find the podcast.
You can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Sarah Inc. website, as well as Amazon and Alexa-enabled devices by asking Alexa to play the 99% Effective Sarah Solutions podcast. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. So let us know your ideas, your topics. What do you want to hear us talk about? What are things that you're interested in? What are the things that are impacting you and your family? Give us a reach out.
Great. And I think all the ways that people can find us will also be in the show notes. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. See you. Talk to you later.